Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for joining me, friend.
Hi, Tashin. Good to be with you.
So, I was sharing with you just now that for me, these conversations are sort of like a portrait of someone and showing me and the world who they are, not through a painting, but through conversation. And I am very curious about you, and you have qualities that I would love to understand more deeply and see more clearly, and also share and portray through this conversation. And so it feels like a real privilege to speak with you and to get to know you better. And that metaphor of a portrait actually feels somewhat potent right now, insofar as, if there was a visual painting, there'd be like a frame around it, and then there'd be the actual painting in the frame. And so I think for me, this question that I ask everyone about a life story is kind of a frame that contains the portrait that I'm trying to share. And we always start there, and it's like, yeah, what's happened to you in your life, and how do you make sense of what's happened? And you kind of get to choose which frame you want to put on it, but I love to hear that question, and it really contains for me. It makes a space for the depths of someone to emerge and for that portrait to come through. And then in the center, I really want to know, about the specifics of specific things that someone's interested, but ultimately I'm interested in the qualities of their soul and their character and who they are, and want to portray those through the conversation. And so, I'm listening to someone and watching them and seeing them, and of course, there's sort of surface level, conceptual, factual things that I'm often interested in, but the thing I'm most interested in ultimately is like, who is this person and what are they on about? So, feels like a privilege to get to spend this time with you and see you better. And yeah, I'd love to start by asking you this question that I ask everyone about your life story, and that will sort of frame our conversation. And do feel free to answer this in whatever way you like, short, long, metaphorical, factual. Tell a long story that is weaving many threads together, or just very brief, whatever's good. Love to hear whatever you'd like to share.
Yeah, thank you, Tashin. And maybe before I begin, I just wanted to share some of what's somatically present for me as well. I was noticing that as you were describing the frame around the portrait, that there was actually like an immediate felt memory of being like three or four, and or probably a little bit older because I'm sitting at a desk next to the window in the classroom. And I was just staring out into the blue sky and I was watching the clouds. And that's almost like all I would do. I would just sit at my desk and look out at the clouds. And my teacher, because I was in Hong Kong then, and I was in this kind of like pretty rigid culture, even for little children. It's like you sit in lines, like being a good child is to sit very still and to be very obedient and to like ask for permission before doing anything. And yeah, there was this way in which I think something in my being always felt some kind of like I was always leaking out of frames. I'm always leaking out of frames. And I remember actually just wanting to disappear into the clouds a lot of the time. And my teacher would actually call in my parents and tell them that I wasn't paying attention enough, or I would get up without asking for permission and just walk around or go to the washroom. So I was actually seen very much like as like an aberrant child in some way, especially in Hong Kong culture. But I don't know, when you were describing the frame, like I was actually feeling the frame of the window, like feeling the frame of a window that can contain like the expanse of the sky and the clouds that float through it. And it was actually creating like a quality much more, less of like trapping or like a form of enclosure that's about constraint, but actually a form of like enclosure that's more like sanctuary. Like here's a frame to be able to enter and feel held. Even if you're a weird fluid cloud being most of the time. So I was just noticing that, and it was like creating a real sense of safety, actually, and trust in relating with you. And I felt like kind of, oh, I'm held in this frame that you've created. Thank you. Yeah. So life story. I guess I started a little bit. I was born in Hong Kong in 1988. My mom and dad really wanted to have children in 1988 because it's the year of the gold dragon. And apparently the percentage of children that were born in that particular year, just like there was like a significant a significant difference because it's a dragons are considered very lucky in Chinese culture. And I don't remember too much from my childhood in terms of direct memory. For some reason, I do want to share probably my first direct memory that I have from my childhood, because it had it's weaved into, it feels like salient and meaningful in attempting to make sense of why I am, like why I am where I am now. But otherwise, like I think I just had a really loving childhood. I have a younger brother, Mark, who is a year and a half younger than me. And I grew up with a lot of family around. We would go to my grandma and grandpa's house every single Sunday, the whole family, because my mom has a lot of siblings. And then we would all just meet and sit around this big round table, like usually up to 15, 20 of us. And we would always have family dinner on Sundays at my grandma and grandpa's. And I think I was like a very, my reputation as a child was, I was referring to earlier, like teachers thought I was a bit of a problem because I was spacey. But in my home life and among my family, I was considered like really, really bratty. Like they thought I had way too much energy and it was like very uncontained. And I was very difficult to manage and control. Like, there's myriad stories whenever my family comes back together about how, I was a very, very uncontrollable child. But I think it was also out of, it was hard for me to follow rules. Like I didn't really understand. It wasn't that I was resisting them or defiant. It was more so that they didn't really make sense to me. And I think there was like a transparency to them. Like if someone told me you have to sit here because that's what you're supposed to do and you should just be quiet, like I just wouldn't get it. So because of that, I just yeah, I guess was labeled as a bit of a problem child. And then yeah, another story, and I was talking about it with my mom actually just 2 weeks ago. I was remembering it. And it's a story that she doesn't like very much. Like whenever we bring it up, she's like very viscerally uncomfortable about it. And It was because, like, it's kind of like a motherly instinct around when I was three. We were in a pool and I was running around kind of like doing my own thing. And I guess at some point my mom kind of lost track of me, and when she turned around and tried to look for me, I was at the bottom of the pool and I was drowning. And she didn't know how long I'd been there for. She was kind of seeing me float up, but mostly I just kept dropping back to the bottom of the pool. And it's interesting because I hear her side of the story, and so much of memory is, yeah, it feels like the contours of memory are often, especially from early childhood, are more sketched or drawn by like the memories of adults. But this is actually a memory that I have. And I remember it's like the first image that feels truly mine is like feeling a kind of burning sensation in my chest from presumably lack of oxygen, but actually like just looking up at the water, like where the surface of the water from below, creating these ripples, like, and having sun, just like seeing light shine through it and feeling just completely mesmerized by the way that light was folding in the water. And like feel and just like having this utter sense of serenity, actually, kind of like I could, yeah, even though I could feel like fear in my body, it also felt completely calm, like serene. And then the story goes that I was picked up out of the water and they weren't sure, like they didn't know how I was doing. I was kind of out, and then they pressed a hand on my belly, and then like all this water just basically spilled out, like waterfalled out of my mouth. So they just kept pressing water out of my body. But yeah, because of that, it's like I've always been kind of like a watery being. Maybe it's because at some point the water just took me, and I took in the water. But yeah, I've always been since, like, it's like for as long as I've remembered, like, just I would always want to walk to ponds, rivers, oceans, just to be around larger bodies of water that kind of like hold everything. Yeah, so that's kind of like that's where I want to begin, just like early childhood, like held in family, held in water, and held in like a quality of serenity. And actually, like, I think now as an adult, I would call it grace. Like, oh, I felt held by grace for some reason, even if I didn't understand it as a child. Yeah, and then I moved to Canada and Toronto, and I immigrated. And that was a major shift, actually. I think a kind of a way of being that was very intuitive and like kind of not, I don't know, it like in a, just like a kind of utter trust in wandering the world and playing my own games and responding to like birds and imaginary figures. Like, I think when I moved to Canada, like when I immigrated when I was six, it was almost like I suddenly felt myself like othered. Like I felt alienated from my own body because I was just aware of being kind of like this Chinese immigrant kid. And I was going to school and I didn't know English very well. And yeah, there was this kind of quality of, oh, I want to fit in. I want to belong. I want to be like the reg, like, you know, like the regular kids who seem like they've like grown up and are often, yeah, have this. Yeah, I have this way of being that I was suddenly alienated from. Just, yeah, so I think there was something about that time, like, and it's such a classic immigrant story. It's like I think any kid, any young person who has experienced like being taken out of like a familiar space, and it's a very common story. It's like you just experience life much more as this liminal domain, like you end up being like halfway between what is familiar and what is not a lot of the time. And you see yourself a lot from outside suddenly. So yeah, in some ways, like I feel like since that point, since that kind of like rupture in in the innocence of my consciousness, I've been like recovering that as an adult. Like, how do I come back to this like completely embodied, like full confidence, and like kind of settling in of my awareness into the grace of the world. But yeah, it's been a journey. So I think I'm going to pause here because I'm also curious what's here for you. And I think I'm like seeking your steering a little bit too.
It's great so far. I'm rapt with attention about it. I love the story about you sort of not quite fitting the controlling rules in Hong Kong, and almost wish I had more of that in my own childhood. And I feel really touched by this story about you in the pool and the grace that you experienced, and almost a sense of, I mean, I imagine that being a really precious experience for you that would be hard for, your mother or others to relate to. They're like, that what happened to you? Like they were concerned for your safety and thought you were gonna die, and you're like, yeah, there's some burning in my chest, but I also felt held by grace, and it was a really beautiful experience and very significant for me. And I'm also thinking about how it seems like a number of my friends that I really love and trust are sort of maybe like bicultural or have multiple experiences in their childhood or languages or, like a really interesting mix of influences that they're synthesizing, that there's not really a clear, you kind of have to find your own context or sense making around how different things relate. And I feel like I'm reflecting on the people in my life who are like that. And I see a capacity in those kinds of people to meet the complexities of our world, and also an intelligence and a wisdom that comes from that kind of a situation that's like sort of painfully earned often. But as adults, they make incredible friends generally, is my experience. And so that's present for me as I hear about you immigrating. And yeah, I'm curious what happened after you were six, and how you got here, and what happened in between. And I would be curious to hear more of what happened to you, and how you started to develop different interests and respond to the world and show up, in your education or work or anything like that. Be very curious to hear more of the story.
Thank you. I want to share that for some reason when I talk to you, Tashin, I always feel like I'm on the brink of tears. Or like when I hear you speak, like it's just an interesting, maybe it's not always, but it feels like it happens with you more often than with others in the encounters that we've had. I think there's also a memory of, yeah, there's something kind of orthogonal about this memory inserting in. And it's actually through, I want to share it through something. Oh, wow. I'm surprised I want to share this. you'll understand. Like, it's going to feel like it's a divergence, but I was at Willow, the Canadian branch of the Monastic Academy, for this 3-month monastic residency, and it was co-held by like our mutual friends Daniel, Ryu, and Seishin. And it was really, yeah, that happened about, I think, like 3 years ago, the summer of 2021. And specifically, what I'm pointing to is a way to gesture to kind of like post, like it's like when I immigrated from 6 or 7 to, you could say, like my university years. I think that was, it was while I was at one point, Seishin looked at me after a kind of like really raw expression of something that was deeply true in my being. And it's like that kind of like when you just, when the energy moves through you, there's no like, oh, what is this going to look like? How do I refine it in a way that makes sense to others? It's just like, ah, like I was just really, really experiencing like a raw expression of truth. And she told me afterwards, she told me that at times she sees me as this being with like angel wings, but sometimes the angel wings are like too perfect. And they almost feel like they could be made out of plastic. And what she was describing was when I experienced this like raw expression of truth from you, it was like one of the plastic feathers fell out and like a real feather grew in. And it was one of those like moments where I was both encountering like the harshness actually of the feedback of being seen as someone with plastic wings, you could say. And then also like the kind of hard truth of the feedback, and then the benevolence of the potential of being able to like grow through any plastic, yeah, like feathers that I had painstakingly glued on for myself in order to fit in. So I stayed with her feedback and I was meditating with it. And I remember at one point I was just sitting and I felt myself just like go right back to me when I was 13 years old. And at that point I was just like in art school. I went to an arts high school, and I was like, yeah, like I think all the ways in which I felt like I wasn't fitting in and I felt really awkward and like I felt this kind of distance in being able to connect with anyone. Like I just felt this kind of extreme like awkwardness, just like I don't fit in the world, I don't fit in school, I don't, like something about me just doesn't fit. And it was really, really painful. And I like hid myself in art, so I just wrote a lot of stories, I painted a lot, I yeah and I read a lot of books. Like I just disappeared into the imaginal, you could say. But I remember actually there was this image of me in my meditation that came through where I was in the art studio as like a 13-year-old. And I remember it's like on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you can stay really late at school and just keep working on your artwork. And I was like seeing myself sitting at this large wooden table And I was working so hard. I was so diligent. It looked like I was there at like midnight or 1 a.m. or something. And we did work really hard on our art projects, but I was building a set of wings. I was just like fabricating this beautiful set of wings. And I had kind of like scavenged all of these, yeah, like plastic bags, like garbage, detritus, essentially. I'd scavenged all this detritus. And I was trying so hard. I was working so hard and like turning this garbage into something beautiful that I could adorn myself with and wear. And I just like saw myself as this, yeah, like awkward 13-year-old self that like honestly is quite cringeworthy. It's like when you look at your live journals from that age. But I saw how hard she worked. Like I saw the sincerity with which she was fashioning beauty out of ugliness. And then suddenly it was like all the shame that I was feeling around, yeah, ways in which when I was, especially in those teen years, like fashioning, like ways of blending in, like ways of being normal, ways of, yeah, like it's almost like costumes that I could wear in order to be able to fit in more and have people like me. Like I think I just like really admired the savviness and the, yeah, like the gumption of like a young girl painfully not fitting in, just like rolling up her sleeves and being like, well, like I need to survive. I'm gonna make this happen. So I think that was a lot of me, like in high school and especially going into college. Like I studied philosophy and English, but I just like went through this. It was interesting. I had amazing friends, but we were all weird art school kids, and we would just make weird films and like hide and like, yeah, hide under stairs often and make, yeah, we would make movies together. It was very art school confidential, just like, yeah, I feel like a kind of, I was really into graphic novels then too, but there's like this kind of like gritty, grimy, like, yeah, we kind of, I really enjoyed feeling also like I did my own thing, but I also like also wanted to fit in. And then when I got to college, that was when I felt like I think I blossomed a lot more. Like it was almost like then I this these wings that I had created for myself in the workshop, like I could wear them. And it was like I suddenly blossomed. And I think I felt more beautiful. I felt more likable. I felt like I knew how to. I learned how to talk to people in a way that would feel kind of like harmonious. And yeah, but I also, I just like didn't really feel like me, like not fully. It was almost like, yeah, it was almost like I achieved something that I thought was like the right way to fit in when I was younger. And then when I got there, I just felt kind of like an imposter. Like I was wearing plastic wings and some people thought they were real, and were dazzled by it, but it wasn't like it wasn't really, yeah, it wasn't like the art that actually wasn't the art that felt like I wanted to live for. So, yeah, you could say that since, like, it's like since I felt also then like this pain of inauthenticity to some extent, it's like not being fully myself, like, yeah, not really, it's like, yeah, just not feeling true, just not feeling true. Yeah, that's when I started making art again. I think I started making art again because I was I wanted to feel what was true.
When you were in art school as a teenager, what were your almost like aesthetics like? What did you care about at that time? What did you think was cool? What was beautiful to you at that time?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I want to take a moment. Such a special question. This is such an interesting, like I had such a diverse range of different art and stories that I was consuming, but for some reason, this artist, there's this Japanese horror artist called Junji Ito, and he kind of has this, he's almost like the H.P. Lovecraft of the East, and he makes yeah, just like these, like he's still around. He's contemporary, but he makes these like really, really like uncanny, dark comics that like bring you to the edge of like the horror in the mundane and also in the kind of like spaces in between. So I there was like a kind of strange fascination, I would say, with yeah, like a kind of Lovecraftian kind of horror, like a cosmic horror. But I was also really into, yeah, like I loved Daniel Clowes as well, who is this. I really wanted to be like a comic artist. I think I really enjoyed and like found the ability to like work with the form of, yeah, like frames in pages to depict like the movement of time and relationality between characters. And I think I just found like the form of it remarkably innovative. And there are so many artists, like there's, yeah, what's his name? Forgot his name. I haven't actually thought about my like teen love of comics for a very long time. But yeah, there was like a kind of fascination, I think, with what is unspoken or unseen or kind of like hidden away into like hidden under the rug, hidden behind the bed, hidden like behind closet doors. So there was definitely a kind of, yeah, fascination with that. I was also, this is later on, but I like sim in the similar vein, I was also really into the work of like David Lynch. And I really, yeah, it was similar. Like I remember when I watched Mulholland Drive, like it like blew me away, just the way in which I think it felt closer, especially at that time as a teenager. Like it felt so close to my experience of reality. Like everything, not quite, like kind of like swirling between like what is real and what is dream. Like again, sometimes like there is like a sinister quality to not quite knowing what is concrete. And for some reason, being almost like compelled to go into that dark corridor, even if your whole body is like filled with a kind of like trembling dread. Like there was something about that where I was very drawn to yeah, I think art that evoked the felt experience of liminality and didn't try to sugarcoat it or make it, yeah, like make it something that's really clean and light and bright. So yeah, that was definitely something I enjoyed. And a lot of my art was the art that I made was so, like so ambitious. Like I remember my high school, like, final project. I decided to create like a fresco because I wanted to know how I wanted to understand and like embody what it was like to paint on wet clay, like the way that the ancients would. And then I painted like a Renaissance painting. I was like, then I want to paint an oil painting like like the Renaissance painters would. And I just like created this really, it's kind of cringy to remember, but like this like massive kind of like Renaissance style painting of like a king with like one side is like his kingdom like falling into decay. And yeah, there was definitely a moral, there was definitely like, yeah, morals embedded into my work as well. Or like or an exploration of what morality was like in these times. So anyway, there was like a Renaissance painting that I created that I spent like so much time on, just like needing to have like the perfect image of like the bag of gold that he's holding and the image of this kind of angelic being. And then I created a digital piece. And then I was like, and then now, like the contemporary time, we digitize like reality. And I just photoshopped a self-portrait, but I like turned myself into like zeros and ones. Like it was like half binary code and half like perfectly paint, like, yeah, photoshopped like a likeness. And so I think there was this ambition to almost like work with art as a way to gesture towards like these meta narratives of how, yeah, how we make sense of self, other, and world given these different times. Yeah, so I was making weird work. Weirdly ambitious work.
Well, it seems like you were describing it as cringe earlier, and I'm like, well, that sounds really cool, actually, to me. I'm like, that's cool. I admire that. I like and I appreciate hearing about it. It makes me curious about now and when you either see art now or make art now, like what you sort of the same question of what you find beautiful or what's compelling to you, but at this time.
Yeah, I've always had a very wrought relationship with being an artist. I think because it's actually in like my deepest soul aspiration to be the kind of artist that yeah. I don't know. Yeah, how I remember hearing, I can't remember the exact source, but there was a story about a woman who I think was in the Amazon or something, and she sees this beautiful snake, just like this like beautiful, almost like luminous snake that just shimmered in different colors as it was moving. And she was just watching it like undulate, just like with aliveness in, yeah, like in the wild. And she tells the person that she's with, like, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Like, this is so beautiful. And then I think it's like later that day, she finds the snake skinned and gifted to her by this person. And he says, like, oh, it's be like I wanted you to be able to take this snake, beautiful snake skin home with you. And she describes just like crying. Like she like kind of looks at this, yeah, dead snake skin, and she just starts crying. And she's so heartbroken because like what she had fallen in love with was just like the aliveness. Like she was just like in love with the aliveness of this being, and it was just gone. Yeah, and I that's like there's something in that. That's what I seek in art. It's like that kind of aliveness, the yeah, it's like the glimmer or like something. Yeah, just like even when you look at skin, like you can kind of see all this movement beneath it. There's so many layers of aliveness that's just like shimmering, and yeah, there's this shimmer to everything when you look at it in with the kind of when you really allow it to. Make contact with you. There's just this like shimmering aliveness. Like I understand why so many indigenous cultures are animist. It's just like everything is so alive. Everything is like constantly breathing. And it's not even just like I think it's easier to see. Like I'm touching this plant in front of me right now, and I can just like feel it humming. But it's also like I can feel it really in technology. Like now I'm touching my like laptop, and it's just like I can feel that humming with a kind of aliveness. And I feel it in fields, like I feel it in relationship. Like there's like me and you, Tashin, and there's like this quality of connection that is in itself like an artwork, like just like this kind of field. And sometimes I sense it as like, say, me and you here, there's like a quality of, for some reason, we're drawn together in this moment, we're gathered together in this framed portrait moment. But there's also something, there's like a latent potential that has its own like density that's unfolded. Like I can just, it's almost like I can feel something like glowing in it. And often it kind of looks like cosmos to me, like the beginning of like a galaxy being born or like a star being born, but I can just like feel something swirling, and there's all this latent aliveness. It's like potential beings that are just asking for like asking for our attention, like asking for, yeah, like asking for a way of looking and a way of seeing that just like births them like into being. And yeah, I don't, that's the kind that's what comes up when I think about the art that I want to create. It's not that I'm creating it. Like, I'm not making it. It's more like I'm being responsive to these life forms, like these like animist fields of latent potential. And they're so mysterious. It's like if I try to think, if I think I know what it is, it's like I immediately overly like constrain its like its unfurling. So then for me, it's like art making has this. Yeah, very, very subtle relational quality where you know that there's something that's like calling forth, like drawing you into its gravitational field, like calling you into its orbit. And then you just have to like let yourself be moved by how it wants to come into being. And then also like know yourself. It's like be in your own body and be in your own discernment as well. So it feels like it's like any art project is like a relationship that I'm nurturing. And it's always in service to more aliveness. It's like just more aliveness. Yeah, I don't know how to describe it. I realize it's not, and it's hard to express because it's, that's why I call it sometimes like ritual art. Because there's materiality. It's like it'll call together bodies and space. Like there will be artifacts that come through it. Like someone might write something or I'll paint something or yeah, like there's so many ways in which this aliveness will take on different skins, but like none of the skins are the actual work that's living. Yeah.
So much there in there that I'll be digesting for a long time, I feel. So thank you for sharing that. I think we'll come back to some of those themes. Something I want to make sure to ask you about is, you seem to me to have a practice of like starting calls with some silence and beginning connection from there. And I wanted to ask you about that practice, why you do that, and what that means to you.
Yeah, when I love asking. I love asking for silence. It feels like a gift when someone enters silence with me. I think there's like yeah, there's a sacred presence in silence. And then phenomenologically, what happens for me when I slow down and pause and release into silence. It's like actually, it's like energetically like this, like if I'm this kind of water being that's like held together its shape, like I just kind of fall apart. And yeah, you could say almost like a drop of water that just drops into the ocean and then I kind of release. And it's really nice. It's just like it's so I mean, there's just a pleasure in that for me, of releasing my skin, like releasing all the plastic feathers, releasing any kind of costume that feels like I need to wear. And then when that all releases, yeah, there's something profound about like what happens in my body. It's like I actually start sensing much more from, yeah, maybe like so much of sometimes social relating can be in the head. Like, how do I show up? What do we talk about? What's the content? But then I actually drop kind of like lower, just like into the belly, into the heart. Like I can feel this, yeah, it's almost like the awareness just starts to move and fan out in this way that's much more, yeah, much more around a kind of felt. I'm smiling because like it's been, I've been like working with the shape of it almost like a an underwater jellyfish with tentacles. Like it feels like there's some part of my body sensing organ that's like it just kind of reaches out and then like feels the field. And then I kind of like sometimes we'll shyly reach out and like feel the other body or the other awareness in the field. And then there's almost like this whole it's like it's curious in its own way, like that way of almost like embodied knowing of the field between us. Like it's like, oh, what's here? Like what are these little attunements that are happening in my body? Like why is my heart fluttering? And then I'm curious about that, or why is this kind of like image or color being evoked? And then there's kind of like this tentacular feeler towards that. And often, like when I kind of regather myself, it's like there is a kind of spontaneity in whatever arises that's just like, yeah, a kind of gestalt. It's like it's almost like it goes out and then it just comes in and it's like, of course, this is the right. This is exactly what's here. And I trust that to be, yeah, like my compass of that truth, the truth that I seek through art. It's like, yeah, anything that is pre-prepared or like it's good to prepare a little bit. It's kind of like, you know, setting up the field, like allowing things to be ready at hand. But whatever is actually being called forth, I feel like kind of comes out from, it comes through from a very different source. So silence like really just allows me, like it gives me permission to go there. Like it gives me space to go there. And then it allows me to just like really show up and be with another in a way that feels true, like it feels true.
I could imagine an alternate world where you instead had a practice of, like, before a call or a meeting or some kind of gathering or something, like, took time to be by yourself and be silent and still. It seems important to you that it's sort of social and in connection with the person that you're spending time with. And I wonder what's different for you about that.
It's very, it is very, very different. Yeah, like even prior to this call, like I sat for my morning meditation and I was sensing like into being in relationship with you and kind of like wondering what posture I might enter for this call. But it's like, I just don't know. I won't know until my body is in some kind of like spatial field or like spatial temporal field with you. So, and I don't know why. It just like that just feels like very obvious to me. It's like, of course, I won't know until I'm in relationship with another, and then we're both attuned, or like we're both just like. And I can't really speak for the other person. I think sometimes It's like every person will enter space and silence very differently. But I know that for me, it's just when I get to be in silence with another being, like that's like the world that I enter. It's like, oh, now we are cre like just our bodies in space together begins to orbit around a kind of like emerging cosmos. So then I want to feel it's like, what is this world like? What does it look like? Like often actually it'll show up imagistically to me. It'll just be like, for some reason I see landscapes. Like I see us in a whale belly. I feel us, yeah, I feel us like moving, or I feel us very still. Like there's just like a kind of something imaginably will arise. And it might have some cues around like my projections of that person. But most of the time, like including that, there's also a kind of mystery to it. Like I just really don't know what I will encounter. Yeah, which is why that moment of like presence with each other, like just like silent presence is. Yeah, it's very intimate and it's like it's intimate and it's like the way that I would love to communicate with everyone. Like it's like that's like my favorite way to actually communicate.
How have your experiences during these moments of silence and connecting to the field shifted your connections with people, and what's happened when you've shared the images or experiences that come up for you in those moments? How does sharing what, it's like sort of a two-part question of like, how does that experience affect you, and how does sharing what you experience affect your interactions with other people?
Yeah, I know I notice myself almost in the tensegrity of the dark and the light of this form of communicating, like this way of being in relationship with others, like both experience in myself and in kind of like feedback from others as well. I think like starting with like the potential that I think both myself and others are kind of allured to in that way of being is like there's something that's so, there's a wonder to it. It's like a kind of enchanting quality to this kind of co-participation with reality. It's like we're kind of conjuring every conversation, every moment of encounter is like a kind of conjuring. There is a magic to the way that we can kind of like author and co-author reality with each other. So I think there's like this kind of often like this world building sandbox quality, like it calls forth like innocence, a kind of like childlike play that is both very sensual in the way that when you're young, like you don't overly think about things, like you just know what you love and you know what you're attracted to and you know what you want to create. You know when you want to climb that tree, you know that you want to like stare at this flower and you know how to like, it's just, there's like this kind of easefulness in which you play with reality. So I find that like in its most yeah, like liberating potential, it has that way of like bringing together that imaginal, like Robert Bayer would kind of call it like cosmopoiesis, like this ability to create worlds again. The danger of it, the dark side of it, is if you can't, if, and it, this is like hard to discern. It's like I have such a rigorous practice in soul making dharma, for example. Like that's like my practice lineage. And when I say that, I mean, I hold a lot of this kind of weaving of image and story with a kind of foundation of emptiness. Like these are all like we're kind of like costuming reality and fabricating reality all the time. So why can't, like, why are we not consciously fabricating in ways that feel more true and good and beautiful? There's like something around that form of reality, creation, like especially when you, like I would consider myself someone who can like conjure reality, which is like someone might actually get kind of like too drawn in to your story. And they might not actually be completely sovereign in their relating with that kind of enchanted reality. And it might be an enchanted reality that they themselves are actually co-participating in. But I've had experiences where, yeah, you end up really clinging to or feeling attached to certain images that are being conjured. Like it's so beautiful, it's so alluring that yeah, there's this way in which like, no, I want to hold on to this. This is true. This is what I'm going to live for now. This is what I'm going to, yeah, this is, you end up, yeah, you can very easily in these territories like end up almost like creating a cult out of your own visioning, and forgetting that it's also transparent, like it's also diaphanous. And like I think that practice of like remembering to kind of release and let go, it's one thing to kind of like know it as like a move, but when there's like a particular story or image that's just, it makes you feel like, yeah, it gives you hope, for example, or it gives you a sense of like security and like direction and deep intimacy. I think that's when it's, yeah, it just is dangerous. It's a dangerous space, like this kind of enchantment of reality. And especially, I think, when you're working with mystery, like with silence, with kind of like storytelling. Like I feel like it's so important for me to I think this is, yeah. I like this question a lot because I've been very much with almost like the ethics and responsibility of soul making and magic and re-enchantment and mystical participation, because I feel like I want more and more people to like know that deep kind of divine capacity within of co-authoring and co-participating in kind of like reality creation. And then there's also yeah, there's like it's kind of unleashing something that if there's like a kind of it's sparky, it's fiery, it can untether you often from it can untether you if you get too carried away into the clouds. That's why the frames are actually really important. And the frame shifting continually is also very important. So I think basically in response to your question, I have yeah, in, for example, practices like collective presencing and imaginal participation. Like I hosted a project called Participação Mística in Berlin, which was all around like collective art making, ritual art making. So 10 of us gathered online for 6 months and then met up for 10 days together in Berlin. And it was amazing. Like there was something about it that was so like the power of the power and the creativity that comes from just like sourcing new realities together and making art out of it. But there was like so, and I was noticing in myself, it's like you kind of, you're like, well, we saw this thing together, so it must be real. And there's like something that, there's like something that can really amplify reality distortion as well. So the wisdom of working with imaginal play, of tuning into like these kind of like other forms of sensing, of conjuring stories. Yeah. I think there's just like a there's a responsibility that we hold to each other in the midst of it that still is in its process of like needing to be clarified. And needing to be created really as a culture.
Find myself drawn to this practice that you have and curious about it, and I can sort of reverse engineer from practicing it with you and hearing you talk about it how I might do it myself, but I would love to hear from you, almost sort of instructions of suggestions of how to go about having a practice like this, both for myself or excuse me, for others who might be interested as well.
What's I'm curious, like what's your story of what this practice is, if you were to reverse engineer?
Well, there's a lot I could say, but seems like taking time to be silent with someone else or a group before connecting opens up space to let in wisdom on multiple dimensions that might otherwise be crowded out by conceptual thinking or words or speaking, and that when you have that space, it seems like for you, you're connecting to a kind of field or shared reality that almost like if you're this octopus, there might the other person may or may not be an octopus, and they may or may not be feeling or consciously aware of what you're sensing, and yet it's there all the same. And that when you make space to connect there, it's possible to sort of almost do the like soul equivalent of like contact improv, where you're like, hey, you're here and I'm here. What are we feeling here? And I imagine you could make sense of that field or heart space in multiple ways, but it's powerful and intimate and meaningful. And what I can feel more I want to say about this. Yeah, I think I'm learning how to dance there with people. And I think sometimes I have a sense of conversations or friendships or relationships as, like, for example, this being not just Tosh and Cheryl, two people talking, but oh, Tosh and Cheryl is speaking right now, that there's this dyad that we are, our third being that's made up of us almost as like organs of a larger thing. And that it seems like yeah, when I can connect to that reality and someone is willing to meet me there, it's more enlivening for me and more meaningful and more fulfilling and kind of better than seeing myself as this separate person that's like talking to another separate person, and they're just happening to overlap. And that's fine to be there if need be, but it's much more fulfilling to be in this kind of a space. And it seems like this practice of connecting to silence and sort of like a shared field or reality, imaginally or other, in another way, helps to deepen into that kind of a connection where it's less about separate individuals sort of passing in the night and more of an interwoven shared reality.
Yeah, that's a beautiful description. In the way that you described it, it feels very much like rocked in your being, which is really cool. Yeah, and basically everything that you're sharing feels like kind of in that direction of, I do. Yeah, it's like I have a strong sense, and even like it moves more towards like conviction that depending on where we locate our awareness, we can really speak from different postures that are both like within like what we consider interior and then like outside. So you can like distributed consciousness is something that you can really attune to or play with. And it's like very exciting to do so with another person or with a group of people. And in collective presencing, which is the practice that I started doing about 4 years ago, like the simplest way of just like directing or gesturing your awareness to something that isn't just in you is like towards the middle. So we always say, when you're collective presencing, there's a group of us sitting in circles together. And what we're attuning to here is speaking to and from the middle. And the way that one speaks to and from the middle is not, it's like for me, it was very much like almost like dropping into a completely different awareness state where I don't really like, I can't know in advance what the middle wants to speak through me or what I want to speak to the middle. It's much more like I start to track and follow and trust a completely different set of biomarkers. Like, for some reason, this kind of like buildup of intensity or like this quality of, oh, something here like wants to come through and I don't know what it is. And I have this impulse to just like pick up the piece, like pick up the talking piece in the midst of this silence so that I can just allow this flow to move through me. And it's close to actually Quaker meetings where you speak when spirit wants to speak through you. And yeah, I find practices like this just allow us to play in that membrane between like self, other, and world, and really like extend or kind of push up against the edges of what we bound in the arena of self. And it is like it's an uncanny space to enter because boundaries are not like walls that split you and separate you. But like for me, it's actually closer to like a membrane of many different layers. Like it's just like membranes with pores that can open and close, like more like, I don't know, sand dunes or cur like layers of shimmering curtains that kind of like shift and fold. And then it's just like a very different form of navigation. It's like, how do you find, like, how do you find each other and meet each other? And then what happens, like, and the thing that's like so amazing for me in these, in the invitation to encounter like self, other, and world through this kind of folding, undulating field, this social field, is there's like moments where you actually do find each other and you find that center. And it's just like the immediate, like the feeling of it is so electrifying. It's like when someone speaks to the middle and everyone knows, like, yes, that is true. We all know that's in the middle. It's like it's like feeling like you've been alone and then suddenly you realize I've always been held in community and we're not separate. We're seeing and feeling and knowing this, like knowing something together. And that, yeah, that kind of knowing, like the kind of knowing that like makes your heart kind of leap out and makes you just like cry because there's like a profound kind of loneliness that's suddenly like dissipating, like you're just meeting in that way. Like I can imagine why it feels like a God, like encounter. It's like you're just like encountering a quality of relational intimacy that, like, besides kind of religious cultures or yeah, I think it's very, how do we actually afford that kind of deep, intimate encounter with reality and a reality that's kind of that's like relational in that way. It's just like it's so relational and it's like a dance and you can't just go straight there. Like it's like you're moving and you're kind of dancing, and then at some point it just comes so close and you meet, and then you kind of come apart again. I find myself just so drawn to almost like a lifelong study of that. Like in my desire to afford more spaces where that can happen, because like that kind of contact just completely transforms you every time. It's like this form of ingression, like you're letting yourself, you're allowing yourself to be like changed in this way. And it's not private. It's not like I'm just sitting here on a meditation cushion and like trying to get to insight. It like really humbles you in the relational encounter with another, where you know that that kind of knowing, like that kind of contact, can't actually be. Yeah, it's like it like requires you to be in relationship with another, like that kind of risk, that kind of like I don't know what's going to happen here. And then I do, and then my hypothesis in the space is that's where like creativity really can like rupture through. It's like in my research, like I consider it like transversal. It's just these like lines of flight from the known, where it's like two knowns that are in paradoxical or contradictory relationship with one another, kind of like generate so much friction in the kind of tension held to the point where you can feel actually the rupture of something like latent that actually is like coming through. That's the future that we can't imagine actually coming through, but even though we can't imagine it, our bodies know how to recognize it. Like our bodies know through like orbital attraction, just through like, I don't know why, but something's like calling me close. And then when I drop all the stories away about why, when I drop all the stories away and it's just like deep attunement to animal body sensing, to energy body sensing, to just like a kind of clarifying and trusting of that, of that attraction. It's like, oh, it's going to just like disclose itself. It's just going to disclose itself. You just keep trusting that, even, and you won't know when, and you won't know what it is, but then when it happens, it's just pure illumination. And it's so hard to describe, other than like, even as I describe it, it's so annoying to me, because it's like, then I feel like I'm kind of describing something that people are like, oh, that's what it's like, I'm gonna do it that way. And it's like, it's not that either. It's, yeah, I think that's why the playfulness is so important. There's like no getting it right. And talking about it makes me shy, actually, because it's like personally so it's so meaningful. It matters so much. And it matters, like, oh, I feel so good when I feel that happening in the field. But it's almost like the moment I talk about it, like something, I don't know, I get scared that I'm like not getting, it's almost like this, like the mark on the page has consequences, and I don't know how I've shifted things by uttering something that's pretty ineffable, basically. I also truly have no idea what I just said, so.
You said many beautiful and wise things that will be of benefit to myself and to many people in an act of great compassion. That's how I see it.
Okay. I trust you on that. It's like ameliorating some of the, like, oh my gosh, what just Yeah. I appreciate. Thank you for Yeah, it's like thank you for like letting me talk about my love of God. That's kind of like that's what I wanted to say. But like almost like bracket that as like not in any kind of denominational like theological sense, but just like this like radical experience of yeah, like the kind of like, yeah, that kind of, it's so hard to describe, but it's so intimate. And it's like the most precious, sacred kind of experience. And we all have that. It's like we all have that. It's like right there, always, right here, always. Yeah. Yeah, I just want to keep remembering that.
Well, as you know, we have about 10 minutes, and I wonder if there's anything else that you'd like to say more about or talk about together. I'll leave the space to you.
What's your relationship with God, Tashin?
I feel recently connected to God. I've believed in God for, I don't know, more than a decade at this point, after an intense atheist period in my teenage years. But my relationship with God has become more intimate in the last few months, even. And I was thinking about, yeah, this conversation reminds me of a question that's on my heart about God. About one of the ways that I'm most connected to God right now is almost like a serendipity in my life, where almost the metaphor that comes to mind is like being on God's rhythm or being on God's calendar almost. Because I, my calendar, use my calendar all the time. And it's like there's a feeling sometimes of being in the right place at the right time. And having the conversation that needs to happen, or doing the thing that needs to happen, or something beautiful and magical happening that's not something I could have predicted or planned. And subjectively, internally, I'm going in or out of being on God's time. It feels like sometimes I'm on rhythm and sometimes I'm off rhythm. And I'm sure from a larger perspective, zooming out, I'm actually always on God's rhythm, always in time. Part of some larger, but subjectively, it's like, oh, I'm either in or I'm out, and we're in right now. We're in right now. And I have this question actively about what is it to be on God's rhythm or not, and how am I getting in or out? What am I doing to get in or out? What am I holding on to that's preventing me from being in God's rhythm? What am I letting go of to stay in God's rhythm or return to God's rhythm? And how do I be there more often? And Peace Pilgrim had a very similar question that I imagine was also different, like the subjective phenomenological experience that she was having was actually probably pretty different from the way she describes it, but the shape of the question is similar, where it's like she was there was this experience that she'd had, yeah, of being connected to God actually, but I just imagine her experience is different than mine, but she was like, why am I not there all the time? How do I get there all the time? And she was asking this question for like 15 years, and then one morning she woke up and she was like, oh, I'm never getting off rhythm again. Got it. I'm never that wasn't how she described it, but she's like, I'm not leaving. And anyway, as I say, it feels more like the shape of the question is similar, even though I suspect our subjective experiences were different. But yeah, I think that's one of the ways that I most acutely relate to God is almost being in an ocean, like swimming in a sea of yeah, like perfection, where I'm in the right place at the right time, talking to the right people, going through exactly what I need to go through, and something that's larger than me that I'm held by and carried forward by. Yeah, another metaphor that comes to mind is like I love the film Donnie Darko. I don't know if you've seen it, but yeah, there's this like
Yeah, with
the chest,
the
yeah, this like tunnel coming out of people, and it really feels like that sometimes where it's just like, oh, I'm being carried forward into this experience that needs to happen. And it gets kind of weird insofar as like questions of like fate or free will come up. And yeah, a metaphor that occurred to me recently with that is almost like there's a gravity or a weight to the universe where certain things feel like they're like stacked or weighted to happen for me in my life, where like for example like that I'm going to spread love with my life, like that looking back on things that happened to me, I'm like that's just what I will be doing, and other things feel less determined and like I have more agency or say over, and that's okay within the larger plan for me to be like, oh, I'd like to do this or do that, and some things are like this is just going to happen, this is or like very highly likely to happen, like high probability or something. And anyway, something larger than myself that I am connected to that's holding the universe and time and meaning and almost the plot of the universe. Yeah, that's my experience of God at this time.
I love that. It's bringing in another dimensionality, like around, because you were just describing it, but it's like, what does it feel like when you're on God's time? Like, how do you know it's rightness? Like, what are, like, Bonnie Roy would, I love her term, like biomarkers. Like, for me, it always comes back to, like, why do I know when I'm in integrity and aligned to something, a kind of like right harmony. And the harmony isn't always like, it's like the harmony can be expressed in hardship and suffering as well, but there's like a rightness to it. Yeah, and I wonder about how, yeah, it's like, what does it mean to mutually, relationally support each other, to find that kind of alignment, that kind of, yeah, like a kind of like a God's rhythm, that like a, yeah, divine rhythm, a cosmic rhythm that just like brings us back into it's so unutterable, but for now, I'm just going to say it just brings us back into rightness. Like, just brings us back into rightness. And I'm just remembering, it's like my heart is so open when I experience that rightness. It's like it's so open that I just want to laugh and cry at the same time. It's just like it's so. It's one of I'm just actually remembering when we spent time together at Steph Susliff's house, and I can't remember the exact contents of the conversation, but there was this like sense of, oh, like what it means to kind of expand one's heart to just like be more intimate with reality, like that kind of. Yeah, just like this holding more of the world in your heart. Yeah, and I think I've just like let I when I was younger, I just like pushed really hard to feel more. And now there's actually much more of this, like as I'm even as I'm saying I'm relaxing, it was just like you're, no one like it's like no one's like more people need to hold it together. That's actually the way. Like we need a bigger heart. We just need more hearts to hold more of reality together. And there's almost like this I've been like really present with. Yeah, almost like a form of spiritual activism towards more equitable distribution of that kind of compassion and sensitivity. And like a kind of, it should not be incumbent upon like a special few to like feel the pain and reality and also the joy and like aliveness of the world. It's actually, it's such a, it's, it demands kind of, it just demands collectivity, communal holding. And maybe that's probably, that's like why I find myself so drawn to spaces of collective divining. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today and sharing such a space together. It's been beautiful to hear from you and to witness your heart. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Toshin. Thank you for. I really admire. Yeah, I admire your being. I really admire your being, and I'm grateful that you are alive.
Feeling is very mutual, friend. Thank you.
Yes.